Richards trying to scoot in there alone. It pinballs to the crease.
Let's get it.
Oh my god! Here we go, here we go.
You're listening to the Crabtree Blues Podcast. With your hosts, Derek.
How you gonna get it, Bobby?
John.
Attaboy, Johnny, eat up, bud!
Matt Casey.
Unnecessary, but totally necessary.
And Cody.
Cody's on.
What's not to love?
What's happening, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Pod Street Bullies. Nice try, Casey. My name is Derek.
And I'm John. What's going on, everybody?
All right, now your turn.
What?
Hey, I'm Matt.
Matt Casey, that is.
I'm Casey.
We are
hoagie-less Monday.
Yep. Hoagie-less, happy, and ready
happy
to talk.
Happy and hoagie-less.
Flyers hockey. The three H's, let's call them that, whatever. Anyways, we're in the midst of a game right now that the Flyers are currently winning. No spoilers, though, because Matt Casey has it DVR'd there, TiVo, whatever you want to call it.
He's got the hopper.
It's like the equivalent of like choking myself, you know, like, you know, I'm just sitting there watching the pain.
Some people like that. I mean, to each their own. I'm not here to judge, but we have a good bit to get through in terms of last week's action, in terms of press conferences, which is becoming a weekly occurrence at this point because Torts always has something great to say and great to talk about. But
or lack thereof, yeah.
Or lack thereof, too, which is even better in most cases. But going back to last week, three games, Flyers dropped two of those three in regulation, two of them to Tampa and New Jersey, and they did beat the Islanders. Great, I guess. Awesome. Yeah. But let's talk about the contrast between some of these games. So we saw really one team play against the Tampa Bay Lightning, the team that we've all become accustomed to. And then those other two games against New Jersey and the Islanders, we saw a different team. Mm-hmm. So Matt Casey brought this up. I'm going to start with you. Tell me, yes, John, I'm starting with Casey. Are you upset? You missed a week.
It's a Christmas miracle.
You're being penalized here, all right, for missing a week. Do you want to bring it up? Do you want to talk about it?
John, you can start. You know, if it's going to be a thing,
no,
John, you go ahead and you start.
I'm fine.
But?
I'm fine. You can talk, Matt Casey.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
no,
go.
You know, this is your
2-minute penalty.
You saw a team in the Islanders game and in the Devils game where you saw phenomenal structure. You didn't see a ton of scoring, but you know what? You saw a team that played two teams on paper that are significantly better than the Flyers. You saw them play them very hard and play them very good. Tampa Bay.
Played very well.
Whatever,
John's just upset. You keep going.
go teach third grade edition or whatever you do.
Fourth grade.
versus Tampa Bay, which it just showed their power play was disgusting. I mean, it made us look like a peewee team. And they just showed their top-end talent. They showed why they've gone to three consecutive Stanley Cups. And we are nowhere near that level. And I think we were just scared. We were just scared of that Tampa Bay team because you saw in contrast versus Jersey, you know, we controlled that entire game with the exception of about 2 minutes of the whole thing. So I'm a glass half full kind of guy. I'm optimistic that two of the three games, at least we were competitive. And John, you said before the season started, as long as we're competitive in most of these games, then, then we'll be happy. Unfortunately, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing competitive games that we're losing.
Yeah, I said that. I don't mean it anymore, though.
you want the wins.
Yeah, I'm getting to the point where just competitiveness is not cutting it anymore. But kind of to piggyback off what you said, Casey, I think when you look at the Islanders game, that might have been our best game of the season, at least top three, which I don't know is saying much.
The best game we've won. I think the Devils game may have been the best game we played, to be honest with you.
For sure. I mean, but if you look at both those games, like, that represented the best version of this Flyers team, where it's like they lay it out all on the, they lay it all on the line. They play just a very competitive game, but the skill's just not there. You know, they just can't match up with 95% of the rest of the league in terms of skill, where it's like that effort keeps them in games, but they just don't have what takes, what puts them over the hump.
Right.
And that's fair. I feel like, and we'll get into it a little bit later with the press conferences, I think Tortorella has a very good understanding of that, knowing that we don't have that skill. So it's going to be very tough to keep up with the opposition. I'm not going to say compete, because the compete level is there. The skill level is not.
Right.
So it's encouraging at least to see them somewhat stick in some of these games. But yes, we did see a very different team against Tampa Bay, and that can be attributed to Tampa Bay just being leaps and bounds better. But against Jersey, a very hot team right now, what, 11 straight road wins, something like that. They just had a bunch of wins in a row.
They're frauds. After, like, I don't know how the hell that team has won 11 straight road games.
It is,
like,
pretty wild.
Well, they scored more goals than the opposing team. That's how it happens, really.
All right, goals are good.
Goals are a little tough for us.
I would take some goals. What are we averaging? Absolutely. Like 1.8 goals per game or something?
I think it's like 2.1 or something like that. Wolf. And it's just because we've had like two games where we've had like four or five goals. So that's like skewing it a little bit. But it's not.
I mean, it does make you think, though, like if we could get some of the band back together, you know, with Atkinson and JVR, could we end up squeaking in a few more wins? You know, whether you like JVR or not, or whether you think he should be on this team, like, you can't help but say, he's one of our best goal scorers.
And he's better than Max Willman.
Right. And he's better than Max Willman. So it makes you think that with the effort and some of our top guys back, we might be seeing a few more. We might, you know, sneak out a few more wins than what we're seeing right now.
And it looks to be like we're a lot closer to that happening. I mean, the report about Atkinson's encouraging. He's back skating in a normal colored jersey. The report just came out, I believe, like an hour or so ago, Monday night, that JVR is getting close to after having his surgery. It's good news. It's great news considering the state of the team right now. I don't know how much it's going to help the team. I'm certainly not going to say they're anywhere close. Exactly. Certainly not going to say that. But they're going to be a little bit more fun to watch with a little bit more skill out there, as is the case with any professional sports team.
And I think what that does is allows some of those guys, like, you know, Noah Cates has played, he's boxed above his weight class all season long. And, like, you know what? Admirable. He's going to stick with the club, but he's just going to be a second line player versus a first line player. And he still shouldn't be a second line player. He should be a third line player, but he's getting back in there. But we're able to drop the Willmans and the Bellows and, you know, the Lisinskis and stuff like that. Like, those guys can now go in and develop and be depth pieces instead of, like, our third line.
How much more developing is left to be done for some of those guys?
Some of them need to be taken out to pasture at this point.
you brought up the point. I mean, you know, not to totally drink the Kool-Aid, but this is what Torts was talking. It's like this team had to learn how to play again before it was able. And, like, now we're competing. Can you get over the hump with, you know, half of these games that we've lost with Atkinson and JVR? Like, maybe a third of them, you know, a little something better.
I think, though, like, when it comes to the learning how to play thing, I feel like they're mastering the effort side of things right now. But in terms of, like, for lack of a better word, like the X's and O's or stupid plays on the ice, there are still those moments where I'm like, man, we don't have this figured out yet.
Right. The structure is better. You have to say, like, the structure is better.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. I just think that there's still a lot left to be had there. And I think that part of the problem is that you're not icing an NHL roster at this point.
Right. The other thing I was thinking about is, you know, I know we're a ways away from Coots coming back, but Atkinson's close. You know, if we had Coots back, and I know it's big what ifs, like those are arguably our two biggest weapons on the power play and the penalty kill. And so, like, you know, the special teams has been a disaster. Like, you know, I know Konechny got a goal the other night, which is great, but like, you know, I'm just like, oh boy, like anytime we're man down, it is tough to watch because you can just see the team starting to formate around it and it just crushes us.
He's got two goals in the past two games for the New Jersey and the Tampa game. He had the lone goal against Tampa. Hayes had two goals against the Islanders. We're seeing the guys that should be contributing on the score sheet, which is fantastic.
There's just not enough of them.
Exactly. That's a fantastic point. There's not nearly enough of them. With Atkinson coming back, that helps. With JVR coming back, that helps. Those are the guys that are supposed to be scoring.
Right.
So I wanted to ask this, and this is a complete side note here. Stamkos, 1,000th point, fantastic. Any of you guys have a problem with them rushing the ice for that?
I didn't really think too much of it. Like, I feel like every major milestone goes against us. Like, Crosby got, like, some milestone against us. Like, I mean, I don't know. I don't really care. I think it's a little bit more of like, all right, you cheese dicks. Like, you know, do that stuff in the locker room.
And in the past, there would be none of that. You know what I mean? Like, hockey was always such a very humble thing where I kind of like to see it a little more.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You didn't see us rush the ice when Yandle got his Iron Man streak.
Yeah. After the first second of the game, we're like, all right, way to go.
Get him out of here.
Right. No, it was a point that was brought up in the High and Wide chat earlier this week. A couple people were like, yeah, that's stupid. Why would they do that? But I see it. I get it. 1,000 points. Cool. Great for you.
The guy's also been a part of 2 Stanley Cups, 3 Stanley Cup, appearances. Like, rush the ice for him.
Yeah.
And plus that wasn't like a one goal game where, like, you know, they ragdolled us. That was a harsh, harsh awakening there.
I think that's why a lot of people had a problem with it, because it's like, all right, you're clearly dominating this game and you're still going to bombard the ice. And it's like, all right, get over it. Like Matt said, cheese dicks. But what we've spent way too much time talking about last week. Let's move on here to a little bit of concern, maybe, if we want to go that route. We're talking about the goalie, really, at this point. I can't tell you the last time Sandstrom played, and that's, I don't even know if that's a good thing at this point. It's guaranteed loss at this point, let's be honest. So Carter Hart obviously is the topic of discussion when it comes to this. He has been up and down all year. He has great games like we saw the first 10-15 games of the season, and now crashing back down to earth. The last three games that he's played in have been the Flyers' last three, Islanders, Lightning, Devils. 61 saves, 69 shots, .884 save percentage. Guys, and I don't even want, I really don't even want to talk about the one goal that he let in against the Devils. Ian Cole.
We have to talk about that though, because like that's two games in a row where I'm sorry, man, you're an NHL goaltender and you're the franchise goaltender. You got to be able to save a puck bouncing off the boards with nobody on you. You have to do it. And, you know, chances are we weren't going to win that game, but that put them up 3-1 or 3-0. We ended up getting all back for a 3-1. So, like, you know, that is a difference in the mentality of the team there. And then against the Devils, you see just, you know, the Fredo flip right into Sealer. And I'm sure it's Sealer's fault. Like, he seemed a little close to him. There was just a lack of communication there. But again, that's a goal that is on Hart, in my opinion, where, like, you got to be decisive with the puck. Yeah. And right now, when we are dealing with zero room for error, you know, you can't make those mistakes. And, you know, the argument is, oh, well, you know, he's bailing this team out. Maybe at the beginning of the year, but against the Devils, man, like, we limited them to 18 shots.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he let three of them by.
Let three by. That's good.
Absolutely not.
We don't have a solution. I'm not saying get rid of Hart or anything like that, but, like, I think they're probably riding him a little bit too much out of necessity. They don't trust Sandstrom right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, in the beginning of the year, right, when he was standing on his head and we were like, well, this is a guy for some reason can stop all the difficult shots. So when it comes to the easy gimme ones, he lets him in. When we were kind of like, we're all right with it because look what he's been able to do. But at this point, and you said it, Casey, he's an NHL goaltender. You know, yeah, you've got to stop the gimmies. And for some reason, I feel like over and over and over again, we're trying to defend his play on a bad goal because of what else he's able to do the rest of the night.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about playing a full 60. Mm-hmm. A goalie's got to be able to do that. A goalie has to stop the pucks that aren't supposed to go in the net because they're not a high-quality shot.
Mm-hmm. And you have to think through. I mean, you know, the goal in Jersey, like, that was a result of a play he made behind the net. It wasn't a bad save. It was a bad play. And so, like, you know,
he's notorious for that too. Let's not forget that. Like, there have been some very questionable plays that he's had behind the net, and they've led to goals, and this included.
Well, and that's the thing too. I feel like among, like, I guess we call media, the untouchable person when in terms of criticism is Carter Hart. You start talking about Carter Hart and people get up in arms. Oh, how could you? The team in front of him sucks. There's no possible way it's Carter Hart's fault. I'm going to tell you, the more and more I watch this guy play, I just don't think he's the long-term answer. And I don't think that he's a terrible goalie. But when you're talking about a team that right now is still fragile and still is going to have morale issues, you can't have your number one goalie letting in shots like in New Jersey where they could have won that game if that shot doesn't go in. No. They can't be deflated by stupid moves, you know, that a goalie makes, or not moves, but decisions or lack thereof moves, where at some point he's got to be held accountable for this stuff. Mm-hmm. And you look at teams like Carolina, who they put in a system where it's like they don't pay for their goalies. They're like, we're going to have a, you know, platoon deal. We're going to only give these guys $2.5 million. Like, at this point, I would much rather the Flyers take that route than go and shell $5+ million for Carter Hart because we're afraid to call him anything but our franchise goalie.
I don't think he's going to get that, though, even when this contract's up. Like,
when's it up? You know, 2 years?
I want to say next year.
But isn't that what he's making right now? Like 5.5 or something ridiculous?
No, he's not making 5.5, I don't think. But I have a hard time thinking that Carter Hart is going to get any type of raise if this is the play that we're getting. Now, things, yes, could change. Absolutely could change. If he starts playing the rest of the year like he played at the beginning of the year, sure. Sustain it first and foremost, because if you can't, you're not worth it. But
3.9,
yeah,
still like seems kind of high
for the play we're getting. Absolutely, 3.9 for the play we're getting is bad. And at this point, you know, even, and this is part of a bigger debate, even if Chuck Fletcher is the GM at that point where we're re-upping Carter Hart, that man has to look him dead in the eye and say, you're not worth what that contract just paid you. And we're not going to pay you a dime less or a dime more. We're not going to pay you a dime more than what you just earned. In fact, I'd go as low to 2.5. I mean, if this is the play we're going to get, be like, okay, we're going to give you 2.5. But listen, you might be supplanted by Sam Ersson if he's going to be playing better. If Felix Sandstrom somehow finds a groove and is playing better than Carter Hart, you're going to be playing 1C at that point.
Right. I mean, and I have a question for you guys. I'm sorry, Casey, but I'm just going to lose this if I don't bring it up now. Why is this guy so untouchable in terms of, like, criticism? Like, one of my favorite people to listen to involving the Flyers about everything else refuses to be critical about this guy. I just don't understand why we can't criticize Carter Hart's play. Like, do you sit there every time he makes a bad play and go, well, if the team was better in front of him, that wouldn't have happened?
Well, I'll answer that with a question too. What's the one position the Flyers have not had for the past how many decades? Like, a solid, stable player at that position.
But wouldn't that make you more critical about his play? Like, to me, sure. That's how I take
to some. Yeah, but that's the thing. You'll take it that way. Others will take it as he can do no wrong. I because just feel
like anybody who has a mouthpiece refuses to be critical about this guy.
I feel like it's a combination of things. One, Derek, to your point, it's, you know, what year was it? 17, where we had the platoon, you know, the eight goaltender. Like, right. I don't ever want to go through that again. Right. That was a train wreck. And that's different Absolutely. Than the Carolina platoon effort yeah. that you oh, were sure. talking about.
That's John. Not, that's a
1A, 1B type right. thing.
And right. 1C, 1D, 1E, 1A, like that.
But I also think there's something to it where, you know, everyone is very critical about how bad we draft and how we don't grow talent. Like, Carter Hart's a guy we drafted. Carter yeah. Hart's a guy that we have grown. Carter Hart came up once, you know, the day that Hextall was fired. Basically, didn't he get called up? Like, right. that was yeah. the thing. And so I think there's a little bit of the, like, we got to make this guy work because he, you know, he personifies the homegrown talent that we're trying to get through. And I think at first it was like, couldn't critique him because he was too young and he was put into right. a bad position. Then you couldn't critique him because it was the bubble. COVID. Actually, he played pretty well in the bubble, right. quite frankly. Yeah. But then it was like COVID year. He yeah. lost his mind. Then it was like team was disastrous in front of for 2 years. Now, you know, it's like team's still not great, but in a situation like New Jersey, you can't say that he was in a bad environment. You can't right. say that. That was right. just mm-hmm. a mistake. And, I, you know, I'm not saying like, you know, put the guy out to pasture, but having that happen two games in a row and having it happen a handful of times earlier in the season too, it's just something that you got to keep an eye on. And I think, you know, the level of awareness is going to come up if it happens more.
He's running out of excuses at this point. Like you said, the bubble, the bad team in front of him, like, yes, still a bad team in front of him. But we've discussed this before where the defense this year is better than it was last year. It appears that it's better. Like, it's playing better. So that takes that excuse away. I'm not right. going to sit here, like you said, I'm not going to throw him to the wolves. I'm not going to say he's terrible. Get him out of here. No, that's not, you know, the intent behind this conversation. But the fact remains, we need better play from our goaltender position. And whether that's getting him a competent backup as opposed to Sandstrom or getting him a backup that's going to push him and find out what this kid's made of. Like, yes, still a kid, sure, but I don't care about how fragile your confidence is at this point. I don't care how fragile your psyche is. You need to be mentally tough when you play goaltender in the NHL. And if you're not, you're not going to make it.
I really wish we had Martin Jones. I'm not BSing. Well,
he's been playing pretty well
for Seattle. Yeah.
But you know, I almost think too, I don't think it's a mental resilience at this point. I really don't. I don't think it's a confidence problem. I just think that there's these plays he's missing. Mm-hmm. I just think that there's like these moments that he's not reading the play correctly, or he's just a step behind or whatever it is. I don't think it's the confidence narrative that we've played in the past. And I'm not necessarily sold on like a backup coming in to push him. You know what I mean? I almost feel like he might be somebody where it's a legitimate 1A, 1B type thing. Because mm-hmm. if you, like me, are looking at this and going, maybe 2-3 years down the road when we're finally a competitive hockey team, we want our goalie to be somebody that we can count on and not let in this crap. Mm-hmm. And I think as of right now, I'm not sold on him being the answer. Not saying that he can't be, but I'm just thinking like, as you're assessing this team, you can't go, we're set in goal.
Like, right. No, absolutely not.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'll stick with what I said. I think there needs to be somebody behind him that if he's not going to press for the starting, quote unquote, starting goalie position, he needs to be playing at a level that has Carter Hart questioning if he's going to be the starter. Mm-hmm. Like that's and again, you want to call it a confidence issue. I think he just needs to figure out, how to be the 1A or the starting goalie. Like right. that hasn't happened yet. And it's frustrating because, and to the kind of original point, he comes to the Flyers as one of the most decorated goalies in junior history. Like right. one of the best goalies to ever play in the juniors. So yeah. the expectations were absolutely there and they still yes. are. It's just a matter of him being able, I don't want to say adjust to the NHL. He has adjusted to the NHL, but there are definitely some things about his game that he needs to fine tune and figure out relatively quickly at this point.
Yeah. Right. I think one of the other things that it's always in the back of my mind is, you know, the Bobrovsky complex, where, you know, we gave up on a young homegrown goaltender a little early, and
sure,
the guy ends up being a stud. And I think we're all kind of waiting for that to happen. It's like, oh, the moment we let him go to Arizona, Arizona becomes a contender and he becomes an all-star goalie. But
oh boy,
you know, the other aspect is, you know, the mistakes he's making, they're ending up in the back of the net. So it's not like, ooh, you know, we dodged a bullet on that one. Like he flipped it to Sealer and Sealer, you had to ice it. Like, yeah, it's a mistake, but it's not a detrimental mistake. And we just don't have the scoring to bail Hart out of those mistakes either. And so it's, you know, one end needs to help the other there. And right now, both of them are at half mast. Mm.
Wonderful position to be in, right? I'm talking about the position the Flyers are in, not the whole half mast thing. anyways, no, I mean, if there's anything to add to that, obviously, I think we covered a lot of it.
Yeah, and then it's probably something we'll visit again.
Oh, I'm sure.
And again.
Yeah. And again. And again and again.
Forever.
So sticking with the defensive side of the game, there's been a demotion, if you want to call it that, and a promotion, if you want to call it that as well.
Look at my pun.
Okay, so Tony demotion.
And
what was the rest of the line in one? I'm drawing a blank.
Was it Risto Raisin?
Risto Raisin, yes. Yes.
It's the Risto Raisin.
Oh, between the singing and the corny.
Risto Raisin.
No need for a dad joke. Risto
Raisin. Just kill me. Just kill me. No, to that point, though, we're seeing right now in terms of the way the pairings are working themselves out. Ristolainen is up on the top pair with Provorov, and D'Angelo has been demoted to the second pairing, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Third
pairing.
He's down with Big Stick Nick Sealer.
Oh, poor guy. I'm talking about Sealer. But no, I mean, let's talk a little bit about what may have led to this. So, John, give me your take on maybe the decision behind moving Ristolainen and both and D'Angelo here. I was about to say Sealer. Good Lord.
Well, clearly Tortorella's not happy with what he's seeing from Tony D'Angelo, right? So he is we obviously have a coach that is not shy about, you know, proving a point early. So he clearly expects more from Tony D'Angelo, which I think is fair, right? He's a top pairing defenseman. I also wonder, I mean, if there's something else going on, and it's complete speculation, but maybe I'm wondering if maybe he's got an attitude thing going on where
can't help just based off of his past,
right? Where maybe that played a role, but that is 100% speculation on my part, you know, because I kind of go third pairing. I don't know, man. Like,
it's
I
like still putting Hayes down on the fourth line.
You're good on a top pair. I mean, at least a top four. But as far as Ristolainen goes, am I jumping too far?
No, covered as a whole.
As far as Ristolainen goes, I've been really happy with what I've seen from him. I mean, it's taken a while, and he was not looking very good in the beginning of things, but clearly he was shaking off some rust. And now he looks like a viable option while Tony D'Angelo figures it out. I don't think he's a long-term option, but I think that maybe putting him there with him understanding, okay, this is not permanent. You're going to be up here. And then when Tony's ready, you're going to go back to the, you know, the middle pair. Then I think that maybe that will help improve his play in on that middle pair. As long as he doesn't look at it and go, oh no, Risto bad.
Wouldn't it be funny? Because I love how we always do like the Neanderthal Risto thing. Wouldn't it be funny if he was like, oh, hello, chaps? Like,
he's like, British now? Like, what the hell?
every time he talks, just classical music starts in the background.
Oh, boy. I hear the intro to Game of Thrones every time he talks.
It's been good to see Risto and Provorov. You know, I know they tried it a handful of times last year to no avail, but they seem to be meshing well together. And I think Risto's like game has probably matured a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm quoting Flyers Daily or paraphrasing Flyers Daily, where you know they asked if Risto liked to get coached, and Torts was like, "Oh yeah, he likes getting coached." And like, you know, the quote that they had was, "He's had 15 coaches in 8 years," which may be a fabrication, but it might not be. Like that might actually be accurate.
I think Buffalo had two coaches this season for right, a good
right.
six.
So I like what I see from Risto. You know, he's still using his physicality, but he's not being a dumbass about it. I think I still want to see like the offensive side of his game come out a little bit more, which hopefully it will. Right. And whether he's there just as a, you know, a placeholder for Ellis to come back just kidding. or if Tony works his way back up, ultimately it's a good problem to have if like somebody's pushing for that top spot.
Sure.
With Tony, meanwhile, you've got Justin Braun. You can put him anywhere, right?
Right. Yeah, you got Braun. I think you've seen that Zamula isn't quite ready for the show. He had a rough time.
Said that before.
Well, he had a really rough turnover. Was it Tampa? Nick Paul?
Yeah, I think he had a
tough. Cut it right to him, right in the neutral zone.
But I'll also say this. Like, you know, I think there's some legitimacy to the rumors that you heard, John, in terms of attitude with Tony. And I think like Torts nipped it. And, you know, the injury that he had for a couple games, probably an excuse to like, all right, man, we're going to reset. I also don't mind the way that Tony and Seeler play together. Seeler's been a pleasant surprise this year. And yep. I think that the stay at home kind of, you know, more physical guy. And then Tony, you know,
figure skates three goals on the season. Come on now. Don't shortchange him here.
He's no Morgan Frost. Oh wait, yeah, he's tripled up Morgan Frost.
Cold, he is.
And then you have that middle pairing of Sanheim and Braun. Like, it's not bad. It's not ideal. You don't right. want a guy making what Tony's making on the third pairing.
Nothing on this team is ideal. So no,
yeah, absolutely not. Yeah, at this point, I'm for whatever's gonna work. I don't care if you've got Provorov and D'Angelo playing on the third pairing, if Ristolainen and Sanheim are your first pair, but they're playing like they were last year. I don't care anymore. I don't.
Right.
If it's a reset for D'Angelo, great. If he can find his way back to the top pair, great. If Ristolainen says, nope, I'm the top pairing guy now and plays like it, even effing better.
Right. That is a problem the Flyers would love to have.
Right. Who wouldn't at this point? Like, if you're going to pay that top pairing, cool, awesome. Like, that he's being paid. I don't want to necessarily say like a top pairing guy, but if we can get a top pairing guy for what we're paying Risto, awesome.
With the amount of money that you're investing in your top four defensemen, it would be a great issue to have where it's like,
oh, yeah,
all of them could essentially be playing on that top pair.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't argue with it. I think, you know, ideally, you would want to see D'Angelo find his way back to that top pair, playing the way a top pairing defenseman will play, get him back with Provorov, and they regain their form like they did from the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. Then you can take what Risto did on the first pairing if he's still successful at that time. Hopefully, you know, help Sanheim a little bit, because not that he's been terrible, but hasn't been great.
He had a goal tonight, which was nice to see.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, great. Hey, you gotta start somewhere, you know.
Yeah, positives, right? Let's be optimistic here.
Was that Sanheim?
Yeah,
Sanheim. Is he on a like a 4-game point streak?
Something like that, probably.
Guy's heating up.
Yeah, woo. Kinley, hey, baby.
4 points in this market, man.
In this economy, Jesus.
It's like I look at Kevin Hayes. Like he's like a point a game player right now, and I'm I don't care. Like, I don't care. I see him lumbering up the ice, and I get so frustrated.
He needs to be a three-point-a-game player right now.
Talking Morgan Frost Jr. numbers here. That's where he needs to be to impress me. But blue line, okay, cool. Let's see how that works out. What we want to really talk about is part of a larger discussion in regards to, again, I feel like this is happening every single week, the press conferences with Tortorella. I think we need music to this. Like, we need a towards this corner, you know, and it's just like this wacky, like you hear like a, it's like the Saturday morning cartoons, like you know, something funny. But
I think it'd be funny if it was just a mashup of Taurus Quest. Be like, that's stupid. What are you guys, half empty tonight? Like,
right? I've got my homework assignment here for the week.
Yeah.
But getting into the press conference here, in terms of a lot of stuff has happened. You know, he was telling reporters they're asking dumb questions. The responses he was giving versus when Chuck Fletcher took the podium. And I think that's what we really want to talk about in terms of the contrast between the two viewpoints, if you will. And John and I were talking a little bit before the show started while we were waiting on Casey here. And I think this is a great opportunity for John to take the mic and give us a little bit about his viewpoint. So
see what I do with it.
You've been waiting patiently. I'll go to you first on this one to make up for the fact that I went to Casey first. Casey's actually muted himself out of courtesy. I'm going to do the same, and right ahead.
No, please don't do that. All right. Well, anyway, I do think it's really interesting because John Tortorella is trying so hard. Guys, come on. It's really hard for me.
Be here. Professional.
Yeah. John Tortorella.
You're not used to kids in the back of the class mocking you? Like, come on. Be an adult.
Is trying so hard to avoid the word rebuild, but he wants to say it so bad. He's like, rev your engines. He just doesn't know what to do, but it's clearly a rebuild, and John Tortorella's bought into it. He understands that he has ripped this to the studs. He's doing what he can from step one, creating a culture, rebuilding this organization. Then Chuck Fletcher shows up. And he's like, well, guys, I mean, we're 5 points away from a wild card. And according to my manual, that means we're in a pretty good spot. So who knows? Maybe, you know, we get a few guys back. Cam Atkinson return. We could be really competing. And I look at it this way. I don't necessarily think that John Tortorella and Chuck Fletcher are on different pages. I don't think that you look at that and go, well, John Tortorella thinks this is a rebuild, but Chuck Fletcher doesn't. I really think that Chuck Fletcher understands that this team is rebuilding. I just think that he's a little, because his job is kind of on the line, and I don't think the Flyers ownership wants to hear that word out of anybody's mouth. That's why he's going ahead and saying other things, kind of lip service to try
that
to
was
instill.
A point. That was a point I wanted to make. Is he towing a line right now? Because he knows if he even breathes the word rebuild,
right?
Scott's going to be like, whoa, 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 whoa.
But the problem
aggressive rebuild.
The verbiage.
But the problem with that is the optics, once again, make it look like the Flyers, you know, management is not on the same page. So whether or not they are, it's again this optic problem where it's like aggressive retool, here comes Nick Delorier. Like, it's just not matching up.
But don't Nick Delorier has been a delight for the record.
For sure. Yes. No, absolutely. I know, but you know what I mean. How everybody
don't you
was like,
dare slander Johnny big stick
hockey.
Nick.
This is what we're doing, you know. Right. So like it just feeds into that kind of like from an optics standpoint, it doesn't seem like the Flyers are all on the same page, even though I do think that Chuck Fletcher understands what needs to be done here.
Go back a second real quick, because there was a conversation that was had in the High and Wide chat where apparently a report came out that Gaudreau wasn't even on Columbus's radar until they found out Gaudreau wasn't coming to Philadelphia.
Okay.
And then they made the moves that they needed to make. They called him and said they want him. How much of an indictment to the bad job that Chuck Fletcher has done is that to him? Because in my mind, I'm looking at that thinking, holy shit, man. Like, you fumbled the ball terribly. Like, you were a yard from the end. You DeSean Jackson did. You were a yard out of the end zone and you dropped it.
I don't know. I don't think that I don't really think that Chuck Fletcher was in a place to get Johnny Gaudreau. I don't think he could move the money to get him. And I think that even if he was trying everything under the sun, it just wasn't in the cards. And if he really did feel like this team was to rebuild, again, I don't want to have this conversation right now, but
sure,
Johnny Gaudreau was just not the move to make at the time.
Okay. to counterpoint that, though, if you're still rebuilding, you've got, and I understand you got to start somewhere, and I'm not going to, I don't want to make this a part of a giant discussion, just kind of going from here. Philadelphia, the Phillies, brought in Bryce Harper, and in turn, they brought in other people because they wanted to be there because Bryce Harper was there. And I won't call that a rebuild. I don't think the Phillies were rebuilding, but is it not a step towards rebuilding in bringing in Gaudreau when you can attract it's other so guys different. To come in here?
It's so different because there's a salary cap.
Well, sure.
In the NHL, where like
but salary baseball, cap aside, let's look at this as in like, hear me out here. Hear me out here.
Salary cap aside.
Okay. Let's not say salary cap aside, but that aside, in terms of that, like, if Chuck Fletcher was competent enough to make the salary cap work, let's pose it that way. Not salary sure. cap aside, okay. incompetence aside. If he was competent enough to make the salary cap work and sign Gaudreau, and moving forward, there was the appeal of playing with a guy like Gaudreau, maybe even a guy like Atkinson, if Konechny kept catching on, there's a nucleus there that you right. can build upon and add pieces.
It's a little tiny nucleus, but
it's and a nucleus nonetheless.
I understand that, but at the same time, you had to move money in order to get him. And in order to do that, multiple reports came out that in order to get rid of JVR, people wanted a first round pick, you know, and I think when you're talking about asset management, even if you got Johnny Gaudreau, this team is not all of a sudden a playoff team because there's plenty of other holes. You get rid of your first round pick, that just wouldn't make sense. So sure. for all the things that Chuck Fletcher's done, that it's a bonehead move. Not signing Johnny Gaudreau to me is not even on the page.
Okay.
Let me ask you this. Hypothetically, if we know now what we know about Couturier, do you think that changes his mind? And I know you still have to move the money and do that, all that stuff. But I think that changes the mentality a little bit. Cause all of a sudden you have Ellis and then you have Couturier, your top two players at each position out. And I think if he had more clarity into the Couturier thing, I'm not saying a guarantee, but I think it would have been more likely than not that he goes after Gaudreau.
I think I'm just having a really hard time removing the idea of moving the money. Like right. I'm having a hard time even entertaining that idea just because it's like in my head, it's like, okay, but you still have to get rid of the money.
That's fair.
Speaking of, we in order to like, we have to find a way to get Ellis off these books. It has to happen. Otherwise we're going to keep reliving this again and again off. Like that, what is that, $6 million just sitting there that we can't play with until he goes on long-term and into reserve, which can't be until the season starts. Right.
What is it, 6.75, I think, isn't it?
Is it that? I mean, like, and so, you know, Couturier, I do have faith, will come back, but Ellis is done. He's never going to play again. And I think, like, that's between that and JVR's contract. Like, I'm optimistic that something will happen this offseason, but then again, it's Chuck. You never know.
I think that if, and I could be wrong here, but if Ellis retires, doesn't the cap hit affect Nashville at this point? Yep. So there's no whole, like, and yes, you cannot, or I should say, no, you cannot tell Ellis and force him into retirement, right. but there can certainly be some strong suggestions if it's not feasible that he ever returns to the ice. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly a conversation that needs to be had, in my opinion.
He
could always come back. Nightmare. He could Brett Favre it and just come back. Like it's a paper move. And if Ellis wants to help the Flyers out for whatever reason, I don't see why he would. He should just say, hey, listen, okay, I'm retiring. That money comes off your books. Nashville pays it. But then if he comes back, I feel like Nashville doesn't have to pay it. I could be mistaken.
No, but there's also insurance involved in it. It's like the cap space is all I care about. Like we would still have to pay him, but that is coming through insurance versus like coming out of the actual like Comcast. Right.
So yeah, that's a corporate thing. And they're going to be upset if he retires because they have to cover it, insure it, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, okay, sure. But like eat it. If you're going to want to make this team better, which is the end result, eat it.
Right.
Right. I don't care.
You got to do the Brizgalov buyout, but in a different way, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, like, hey, that decision is, I mean, not unfortunately, as of course he should have this decision, but it's totally up to the player. I mean, and if Ryan Ellis thinks at some point he's going to be able to return, he's not going to retire.
So knowing what we know now, should we try to stash him in the AHL?
Can we waive him?
I don't know. Sure, we waived Andrew McDonald.
Was he on long-term injury reserve?
Well, let's say next season.
Sure.
There's reports that he's healthy and he plans on playing, and you waive him.
Sure.
And let's say he clears. I have no reason to believe he wouldn't clear. I think it's a move that can be made. And at that point, like I don't know how AHL long-term IR works, but at that point it's off our hands and there's some cap relief, not all.
But if he's on a one-way contract, isn't it the same?
He would have to clear.
I don't think he can do it. I think he has to stay.
I don't know. I feel like you can waive anybody though.
But I'm pretty sure that the whole, remember we've had this conversation multiple times where the difference between a one way and a two way is
it's waivers.
No, it's the pay.
It is. It's not. I'm sorry. Yeah. The age is the waivers.
I've said what you just said, and you told me what I just said to you.
Yeah, I'm flipping the script. I'm just testing you to see if you remembered. You passed. Way to go.
So regardless if he's in the AHL or the NHL, they still got to pay him that $6 million plus.
But McDonald's was a one way too, if I'm not mistaken, and there was some cap relief associated with that.
Did we buy out McDonald? Did we just full out buy him out?
No, they bought everybody McDonald's.
Yeah, difference. Big difference.
Oh, man. What a
play. I've got some research to do on this because I think it's a feasible move that could, at the very least, save them something. I think, I don't know how the cap hit works with the AHL, but I don't know. That's something I need to look into.
Do you want to talk about the press conference?
Yeah, back to the original point here.
Holy hell, did we sidetrack? I think
you're right, John. It's like to say everything except for a rebuild. He's like, yeah, we're basically like the Chip and Joanna of the hockey world here. We're gonna come in, renovate, gut it, you know, make it look pretty, but it's gonna take 4 years and all of your money. So you know. And then Chuck is doing like the stare, like, you know, I do it whenever I have to like do corporate presentations and stuff. I'm just like, yeah, we're down. But like, if you look at like the September numbers and how they go against last quarter, hey, we're on the upward trajectory. Like it's just spinning bullshit. And that is exactly what Chuck is doing there. Like he has to toe that line because he can't be like, yeah, we're rebuilding. Then all of a sudden it's like, oh, season ticket holders aren't renewing. Why? Right. I can't imagine why.
Right.
You know, everybody reads between the lines, and like for better or for worse, we're a pretty savvy and like vocal fan base.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think everybody kind of sees the same thing, at least who follows the team pretty in depth. But you're right. There's just a disconnected messaging, and there has been for like a year.
Oh yeah, yeah. You can tell by a lot of what Tortorella says that it almost seems as though he's speaking through clenched teeth. Like he knows that this is a rebuild. He absolutely knows, but he can't say it because Chuck Fletcher won't say it. Yeah.
Use the word.
Yeah. It's like under, you know, section 3.A, like rebuild in quotes will not be spoken at a press conference unless saying we are not rebuilding. But Fletcher is just hell bent, excuse me, on the fact that this is not a rebuild. So I and Ant Sanfilippo brought up a good point in an article I believe that he wrote, if I'm not mistaken, earlier this week, that there are things that Tortorella is saying that are meant to be said the way they're being said. And if you pay attention to them, like I really do believe that I think Tortorella wants Fletcher out of there.
I was going to say, is he secretly telling us who really killed Kennedy?
He could be. Who knows? If you dig deep enough, like we're talking national treasure type stuff here. But, you know, I think Tortorella is just probably unhappy with the fact that there is no skill to coach. Like there is very little skill to coach. You can only rest your laurels on the moral victories for so long in terms of, yeah, they're giving great effort. how long before he's just going to get the complete shits of saying that?
Right. And, you know, I think that's what, you know, to the shorter press conferences that Torres has, like, that's what, you know, that's what he's like. He's like, yeah, my guys gave an effort, but like at the end of the day, like, right. I know it wasn't a win. Like, stop trying to box me into this thing.
Right.
Oh yeah. That's probably how he feels being asked some of these questions. Like, you know, what negatives can you take away? Like the effort. That's it. That's the positive right there.
You know what the crazy thing is? And I was just looking at this here is that, like, as bad as we have been, there's still five teams that are worse than we are.
Pretty crazy. NHL,
which is like, whoa. How? Right. And like, if we
is one of them Ottawa?
We're tied with Ottawa right now.
Suck it, Giroux.
But like, if we go on a two or God forbid three game winning streak, like we're skyrocket.
Derek, it's Chuck Fletcher on the line.
Oh, no.
Here we go.
Oh, boy. Let's I don't hope for losses, but
I don't know. I will say it's a John. I don't know if you're experiencing this, but it's fun watching the Rangers flounder too. Mm.
Welcome to the club. Quieter over at Madison Square Garden.
Well, what was it? Truba, who said, was it? Athanasiou was like, that guy's getting paid $8 million and he's not scoring any goals and he's cheap shotting people.
Is Athens, see you on the Rangers now?
I don't think he's on the Rangers. He's on another team. He
was talking about somebody else.
He was talking about Truba and how Truba's making like $8 million a year and he's not scoring any goals. And I'm like, good. I'm like, good. Keep it up.
Can we say goodbye? Because I got to pee.
I guess. I mean,
yeah, the game started. Let's go.
Yeah, third period's back on. Nathan McKinnon's not playing. Flyers might actually win this game. Matt Casey.
Now we're done. Hey, Pod Street Casey on the Musk Machine.
There it is. John.
You can find this podcast on all your various podcast listening receptacles.
All right, wonderful. Well, with that being said, I got my book of dad jokes here. I'm going to start reading from page one. I got a good one right here.
I'm going to end the broadcast.
Right here. All right, well, you end the broadcast after I say this. You can find me on Twitter at PodStreetBob. You can find John on Twitter at PodStreetGove. All of us on Twitter at PodSDBullies. Our affiliates, Flyers High and Wider on Twitter at FlyersHW. 5-Minute Major Podcast with David Master on Twitter at 5-Minute Major Pod. And check out the guys over at The Hockey Focus on Twitter as such, The Hockey Focus. Until next week, folks, have a wonderful week. Enjoy some hockey. And John, go
bye now.
Go take care of business.
Bye now.